Blog Talk Radio.
Sound means. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Off the Crossbar Live. It is Thursday, February 14th, 2013, and it is Valentine's Day, aka somebody better go check on Taylor Swift Day. I'm your host for the evening, K. Ross Reed. Joining me, as always, is Adam Orson Wells. Joining us, I assume not, because he is out checking on Taylor Swift, James Jameson. Not with us this evening.
Not with us indeed.
Adam, how you doing tonight?
I cannot complain, man. How about yourself?
I'm doing very well. Doing very well. Welcome back to another episode of Shorthanded Radio, a.k.a. Dump and Chase Radio. I'll put them out there. You go get them. How's that sound?
Fantastic. Before we go on, I'd like to wish a happy birthday to our buddy Steve. It's actually a reason worth celebrating on today, the 14th of February.
Absolutely. Happy birthday, Steve.
Steven!
So what have we got on the docket for tonight?
Tonight we actually have a very special episode of Off the Crossbar Live. We are going to take on the topic du jour, of course, the hit on Erik Karlsson by Pittsburgh Penguins forward Matt Cook. His skate certainly preceded him, does his reputation. We are going to talk Canadian Olympic preview in a segment I have dubbed Crosby, Stalls, Nash, and Young. And of course, as has been promoted for the last couple of days, we have a special feature interview with Ryan French McDougal, organizer of the Montreal Pond Hockey Festival, which is an internationally renowned outdoor pond hockey festival hosted right here in Lachine, Quebec, each December.
Look forward to hearing that one.
It was actually a fantastic time. It was a great interview. As you know, Ryan's a great guy. He was easy to talk to, and I think our loyal listeners will have a very good listen for their podcast tomorrow morning, for their Thursday evening listening pleasure right now. But for right now, it is, as always, this time of week, time to go
off the crossbar.
Ooh, I never get sick of that sound. I love it. All right, so off the top of the show today, this has been the buzz around the hockey world. Adam and I were just watching Gino Retta make his commentary a little bit before pregame show here. The hiss, the leg sweep where the skate blade of one Mr. Matt Cook ended up severing the Achilles tendon of Erik Karlsson. Announced today that Erik Karlsson has already undergone surgery, but will be missing a minimum of 3 to 4 months. Adam, how do you feel about this play? When you first saw the replay on this, what did your gut tell you happened? Just off the cuff, before your conclusions, before anything, you see this play on I assume, SportsCenter this morning, maybe live last night. What's going through your mind instantaneously?
How the hell could he do something like that? If you look at the first time I saw it, it really did look like he thrusted that leg out there with every intent of hurting him. And I didn't like that one bit. I mean, knowing that it was Matt Cook, you know, yeah, sure, he turned over a new leaf, he found Jesus, whatever, but it just seemed like he'd gone back to his old ways. I watched the clip about 3,000 times today. When you look at it, I don't think he really did do it intentionally. I think he wanted to hurt Karlsson. Like, he will not hurt, but, you know, reduce his effectiveness for the rest of the game. His eyes were on the puck when that happened. I don't think even an NHLer's peripheral vision would be good enough to be able to pick up, you know, that kind of aim and everything while tracking the puck. I really would like to give Matt Cook the benefit of the doubt. He really worked hard on, you know, his image and all that yada, yada, yada stuff. I don't think he should be put in the same book as Rafi Torres at this point in his career, if what he says is true.
Yeah.
But
That's really the issue, I think, with a player like Matt Cook, is he wrote the book that Rafi Torres is in, unfortunately. He has managed to turn a new leaf over the past calendar year since returning from that big suspension. But with Matt Cook, your gut just kind of tells you that he's innocent until proven guilty at this point.
Guilty until proven innocent?
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, or something like that. Yeah, that's okay. We're the Wayne's World of hockey broadcasting.
Party on.
Yeah, that's exactly what I meant to say. He is guilty until proven innocent at this point in his career.
Thing is, though, you can't.
You have a hard time giving a guy like that the benefit of the doubt. And when you live in the age that we live in right now, where every play is broken down in high definition from 15 angles, frame by frame, it's very easy to see that leg very slowly coming out, turning sideways, coming down, and coming back in a slicing motion. My gut initially, just because it's Matt Cook, to be perfectly honest with you, tells me, throw the bum out, I don't trust him. If there's any doubt at all, this guy's burned all his get-out-of-jail-free cards. But when I look at the actual play, and I think that what you have to do, what Brendan Shanahan is certainly within his responsibilities to do, is to remove the emotion of the moment, to remove a player's history.
Take the numbers off the back.
Exactly. That's the phrase. It's to take the numbers off the back. And so you look at that play broken down, and all you see is a forward making a play on the defenseman. It's a very common play in the National Hockey League to try to get that leg out and to pin your player's body to the boards for that extra second. The idea with clutching and grabbing being removed from the National Hockey League game right now is that players are going to take every advantage they can to cost that extra half second. And when a player skates as well as Carlson does, every player on the opposing team has been instructed by their coach to finish every check. I don't want to trust Matt Cook, but when I look at the video replay on this, I have to. I think you have to give him the benefit of the doubt. As you said, his head was turned away. He was not looking. He was making a play on the puck, and he was making a play that is very common to the game of hockey.
Yeah, because had that been, I don't know, Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, one of those guys, you'd definitely be giving them the benefit of the doubt. You wouldn't think they'd do something like that. And like I said, yeah, the first thing I thought when I saw that and when I heard about it is like, damn, that guy's an idiot. Why would he do that?
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, the more I look at it, it just doesn't seem like he would have to be very, very good at.
Well, and let's face it, an evil human being, not just yeah. very talented actor, but that's a career-ending injury
exactly.
potentially. That's the kind of thing that Robert Lang did not come back from. Now, obviously, Erik Karlsson is much younger than Robert Lang, and we obviously do hope he comes back. I know, just purely speaking for my fantasy pool, I'm dead in the water right now. I thought Loop will hurt me. Karlsson's going to kill me. But this incident, when it comes down to it, I think really represents one of those murky, murky gray areas between the clear right and wrong in hockey. And I think you're seeing that in the responses of both GMs as well. I've got two quotes here, one from Brian Murray, GM of the Ottawa Senators, saying, "As I told Brendan Shanahan, it's not my job to make that judgment. I'm disappointed that Erik got hurt. I'm disappointed for him and our team. It's dreadful. I was upset at the time. It's Matt Cook, and there is some history there. It's one of the best players in the league getting hurt. But I can't do anybody else's job on my own, and it's of no value one way or the other to the Ottawa Senators if Matt Cook is suspended or not. We don't get our player back."
Yeah.
So I think what you're seeing there is someone like literally expressing the opinions that we've expressed here, saying, yeah, I was pretty upset, and it was Matt Cook, but when you look at it, it's a gray area, and he can justify Shanahan going either way. And the league did announce today, by the way, that there will not be a suspension.
Yeah, and I really do think that that's the right call in this case.
Yeah.
You know, the worst part is though, that never should have happened. The play immediately before that, they rung it off the crossbar with a C, not a K, and the puck did go up into the netting.
Yeah, and
it
that's,
was just missed by everybody on the – well, I mean, the players saw it.
And that is one of the most frustrating things for a player on the ice is when you see that happen and the referee doesn't.
Happened last night in our game.
Literally happened. I almost took 2 minutes in a league game last night for yelling at a referee that the puck was out of play.
Yep.
And the funny thing is, and listen, I'm one to use many an expletive on the ice. And all I said was, "What are you doing?" And I almost ended up in the box. I think this guy...
Oh, yeah, it was right down in my corner.
He was strung a little tight last night. That puck was clearly out of play, off the netting, back in play, and their defense was winding up for a slap shot that was headed for your head.
Yeah.
So I was looking out for you. The second quote I've got here is from Ray Shiro. Again, I'll get through it quickly. Just sort of shadowing, I think, the sentiments of Brian Murray. I feel horrible for Erik Karlsson. I feel bad for Ottawa. It's a bad feeling, but I can't rationalize where that was a dirty play or anything with intent. Our fan base knows how it feels to lose a star player. It's emotional. I know what it feels like. It's just very unfortunate. I would not be defending Matt Cook if I thought it was a dirty hockey play.
No. How many times has Cook been suspended?
This would have been number 6. He's been suspended 5 times in his career to date. And I think it was something along the lines of 28 games so far in his career missed due to suspension. But something to take into consideration is that a good chunk of that time was played during the headhunting era, during the old NHL, as they're now referring to it as. He was playing at a time when they didn't hand out suspensions quite as easily as they did. So for him to have that career total, I mean, let's not sugarcoat this. Matt Cook is a guy who I would have voted out of the league 5 years ago. He's a guy with an absolutely dirty reputation for going out and legitimately trying to hurt opposing players. But I just don't think that's what happened here.
No.
I think he definitely walked the fine line between careless and reckless, but I don't think that there was any intent to injure there.
The guy's been around. He's played almost 900 games now. He's got over 1,000 penalty minutes. I mean, he's not a saint. He's been a total douche. But again, I really do think you could buy into his... I did buy into his turning over of a new leaf because, you know, in order to stay in today's NHL, you can't do things like that. The hammer is down on this kind of stuff, and they scrutinize it so much. And I think that the guy knew coming into, season before last, that if he didn't get it together, he wouldn't continue in the league.
Oh, absolutely. He's not Happy Gilmore. I mean, we're not – he's got a bad reputation, but to actually attack someone with a skate blade, I mean, we are literally talking assault with a deadly weapon at that point. Like, we're talking about
– intent to injure.
We're talking about something, in my mind, if you go after somebody with a skate, even if it is lower body, that is far, far worse than anything that got Todd Bertuzzi or Marty McSorley in jail.
Mm.
Or not in jail, in court, I should say. So that being said, look, I think we need to keep a close eye on this situation. I think Matt Cook from here on out will be on the shortest of leashes in Brendan Shanahan's doghouse. But I don't think he deserved a suspension here, and I think the right call was probably made by the league. I don't think you have any evidence, and I think that just suspending a guy essentially because of what he's done in the past without any proof of intent here just sets a bad example.
Yeah.
And we can't start branding players like that in the National Hockey League. It needs to be a fair, honest, and open system. And I think that's what we saw in effect today.
Yep.
All right. Excellent.
Fair enough. On to the next.
On to the next. All right. So we are talking Canadian Olympic preview. There have been a lot of people out there with 1 year between right now and puck drop in Sochi, releasing their rosters for a potential Team Canada. I know Ray Ferraro has got his out. I know Craig Button has got his out. There are a few other pundits and talking heads around the hockey world that have already started to predict that. I'm not quite as bold. I think that there are a lot of question marks that are going to need to be answered in the next year before we can start placing players into roster spots.
Especially with the amount of depth there is here and the amount of variables that you got to take into account. I mean, there are just too many great players to be able to just say a year in advance, okay, yeah, you're on the team.
Definitely. And look, when we're talking about this condensed NHL season, one or two players who you think are shoe-ins are going to be hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, that is
not Canadian.
The fact of the matter heading into this type of season is that when you condense that much hockey into that short a period of time, injuries are going to be more common. That's why we talked about our season preview before this season even began. It is the deeper teams, the teams that can roll those 3-4 lines that are going to have continued success during the season.
Yep.
So looking ahead then, let's just talk some storylines. Let's tell everybody what they could be looking at in terms of the most interesting stories to watch as this year unfolds. Now, last week we talked about the goaltending controversy. We all agreed that Carey Price would be there on the team. Some of us did not agree as to who would be getting the starting roles. I think the only unanimous thing between us was putting Carey Price on the roster.
Yeah.
Between you, James, and I think we had variations of Marc-Andre Fleury, Cam Ward, Martin Brodeur, and Roberto Luongo filling out the other two spots. It's just I wish that there was a some sort of way for everybody at home to just see the look on your face at the very mention of Luongo's name. I mean, why would you take the guy who won the last gold medal with you,
and
right?
And who's currently sitting in top of the league with a 1.45 goals against average. I know, it's just a gut reaction every time.
So, again, I don't want to beat a dead horse. We won't necessarily go into the goaltending situation again, but I think that there are a lot of very interesting storylines to follow up front, and I think that they fit nicely into one of my favorite band names. So we've dubbed this little section Crosby, Stalls, Nash, and Young. So we're going to talk about Sidney Crosby. We're going to talk about all of the Stahl brothers that are currently playing at the NHL level. We're going to talk about Rick Nash, and we are going to talk about the youth movement in the NHL right now, youth movement among Canada's top young forwards, and what effect that will have on the end Olympic roster. But let's start at the beginning. Let's start with
Sid
the Kid, your favorite. What are some of the storylines you see being important as we follow Sid the Kid in the 12 months leading up to the Sochi Olympics?
Well, I mean, okay, look, in Vancouver, I got to say, he wasn't that impressive. He basically just cruised through most of the tournament, but then when it counted most, he did exactly what he's been groomed to do his entire life. He scored the golden goal.
Absolutely.
And, you know, he captained the team well. He just wasn't statistically incredible, except for the most important, which, you know, I guess who cares, right? It doesn't matter how you did in the season. If you win the cup, you win the cup.
Yep.
And, yeah, you know, he is probably the best player on the planet, arguably, I guess.
That was the most begrudging acknowledgement I've ever heard.
He's awesome. All right, fine. Sure. Fantastic. Okay. And, you know, he's currently sitting third in the league with 20 points. He seems to be back.
And he will win the Hart Trophy this year, as I predicted.
That remains to be seen. Yeah, I mean, as long as Sid the Kid keeps up at this pace and playing as Sid the Kid did before Sid the Kid was Sid the Concussion Kid, great. Yeah, he should be the hands-down choice for captain. You know, you've got dudes like Rick Nash and stuff who are also great leaders, but, you know, Sid's got the gold medal, he's got the cup, he's got...
Yeah, and I think if you were ever setting up for an Olympic Games that Sid was primed to dominate, this is probably it. I mean, he's at his offensive peak, and he will be in 2018 as well. He will still be there. I mean, we'll be talking early 30s, late 20s at that point. But really, these next two Olympic Games are Sid's chance to make a name for himself. He got his feet wet in 2010, and he did score the golden goal, which he will always be remembered for, which, I mean, I've got, you know, the McFarland figurine right here on the shelf in the studio of Sid scoring that goal.
It's true. Hermetically sealed.
But what I think will be the main factor is how well does he perform? Obviously, he will be on the team. Obviously, he's the consensus pick, as you said, for the best player in the world right now. I think it's going to be the fact that he almost disappeared a little bit on the big stage last time, and he was very young and presumably very nervous at that point. But as you said, he stepped up when it counted. So maybe that was a flash of things to come. Maybe that's a little glimpse into the future. And I would like to think so. But the elephant in the room, as you mentioned, is the health and durability of Sidney Crosby over the next 12 months. If anybody's going to be affected by this lockout condensed season, it's going to be the guy who's concussion prone. It's going to be the guy who doesn't have the time to let his body heal up in between games that he would normally have. Do you think in your heart of hearts, in your bottom of your gut, do you think Sidney Crosby will remain healthy for the next calendar year?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think he did it right when he was injured, and he took a lot of time.
He did, and that was, he took some criticism for that, and he took a lot of praise for that.
But hey, I mean, to be the future of hockey, to be the poster boy for hockey, you've got to take your time, because otherwise you end up with another Eric Lindros-style thing, guy with all the potential in the world, but then just sort of fades off because of injury and stuff like that. Sidney Crosby has to be in the NHL for the next 10 years. He has to play an entire career, probably with Pittsburgh. I mean, they're not going to trade him unless something horrible happens, whatever. But he's the face of the franchise. He's the face of the NHL at this point in time. And he's got to stay healthy. He's got to make damn sure that everything he does is in his best interest to stay as healthy as long as possible.
Well, I think you really hit the nail on the head there, Adam, when you talk about Eric Lindros. I think that is the archetype for what not to do in this situation. And I don't mean to be critical of Eric Lindros. You know that I'm a huge Eric Lindros fan. I genuinely believe that for those 16 months when he was at his peak, maybe no player ever dominated the National Hockey League the way he did.
He was unstoppable.
When you have a man that size who will run people over to get to the slot. And then, I mean, I remember watching Rock'em Sock'em highlights where Lindros is literally holding off two guys with his left arm and scoring a goal with one hand on the stick with his right arm. It's
flipping it, roofing it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just pure dominance with strength and size. But the bigger they are, the harder they fall. And I think Sid maybe took some notes from watching Lindros' career progress in so much as he took that time to come back. And by all accounts, Crosby is 10 pounds heavier and significantly stronger than he's ever been in his entire career heading into this lockout shortened season. And I was honestly hoping we would get to argue a little bit. I thought maybe you wouldn't trust the density of that neck muscle that Sid's been building up, because I'm completely with you. I think he will be back, and I think deservedly so, he will have that durability. I think he worked for it, and I think he earned it through hard work and patience.
Now, I don't remember if we've spoken with James about this, but do you think he'd want Sid for captain, or do you think he'd want Taves?
No, he would want Taves.
Okay.
And to be perfectly honest with you,
it's a logical choice as a second choice.
It is a very logical choice. And look, if Sid isn't Sid, Taves gets the C. And I hate to say this, but the fact of the matter is Sid is bigger than life. And you have to give it to him based on that merit. I think Taves was a far better player in the last Olympics. That's why he won the tournament MVP. I feel like Jonathan Taves is a more valuable player to an international hockey team because of his ability to, one, absolutely murder the shootout. The guy is lights out one-on-one.
I'd have trouble stopping him.
Oh, probably. Defensive awareness.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about a two-way player. And a player with versatility. He's a guy who I would be comfortable moving to a wing and trusting him to play that spot. Obviously, I would not move him out of a center position if I didn't absolutely have to. But he's just one of those guys that I would let him play the point on the power play and trust his defensive abilities. But that being said, Sid has the star power. I mean, Sid is the headliner. That's who you have to put the C on.
But for the Olympics, does that really matter?
Yes. Because Canada cares so much. Because there are far more Sidney Crosby jerseys being worn by 10-year-olds in this country than Jonathan Taves jerseys.
That's true.
Regardless of who coaches would rather select for their team, regardless of what talking heads like me, you, or James have to say, Sid brings the star power. And for that reason alone, marketability-wise, Hockey Canada-wise, you have to put the C on that jersey. You firmly put an A on Jonathan Taves' jersey, and you never take it off. But I don't know. And I can just hear James's head exploding somewhere across town as we make this decision.
Well, he should have been on the show if he wanted to argue with it.
Yeah, but that's Yeah, my heart says put it on tapes, but my head and my gut say you just can't.
Last Olympics, what was it? Scotty Niedermayer was the captain, right?
Correct.
And then Pronger, Crosby, obviously, and who was the third one? Aginla, I guess we're...
It would have to be Aginla, but I'm not certain. Don't quote me on that.
Yeah, it was definitely Aginla, Crosby, and Pronger wearing the A's, and Niedermayer had the C. Yeah, okay.
All right, so Crosby moves up. We're giving it to him on a presumable 2-1 vote on the Opie Crossbar staff panel. All right, so let's talk about stall tactics.
Stall tactics.
How many stalls have you got on the Canadian Olympic roster for 2014?
I don't know if it's definitely a package deal.
No, it's not. You can take one.
Well, definitely. I like.
They already did take just one.
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying definitely Eric. I like the cut of his jib. I like seeing him play with Jordan. Mark's all right, but I would definitely have Eric and Jordan.
Interesting, because I have got Eric and Mark.
Really?
I do not have Jordan Stahl on my team. Here's where we'll go. We'll start here. I think Eric Stahl may not necessarily be the hottest center for the number three center position for Team Canada come time for the Olympics. But I will take him based on resume. He's been there before. He's proven that he's got it. And he provides something that Sid and Jonathan Toews don't, which is pure net presence. He's a big dude.
Yep.
At the end of the day, that counts for a lot in hockey, especially in Canadian hockey.
6'4", 205, 210, I think?
You're the stat monkey. I'll trust you on it.
Yeah, 6'4", yeah, okay.
So I've got, obviously I've got Sidney Crosby in the number one position for center. I've got Jonathan Toews number two. I've got Eric number three. I don't have Jordan number four. And the reason I don't have Jordan Stahl number four is because I believe in a true fourth line, which is the only reason I would consider taking Jordan Stahl.
You mean a grinding, checking?
Absolutely. Okay. I mean, I want crashers and bangers. I want meat and potato hockey players on my fourth line. But I'll take Patrice Bergeron. And again, how can you not take Patrice Bergeron, right? So if I look down the four center slots, you have to give it to Crosby. You have to give it to Toews. I give it to Eric Stahl based on resume and based on the fact that he is a prototypical perfect third-line center for an international competition. He's a first-line center on damn near every hockey team in the National Hockey League, perfect third-line for Team Canada. But that being said, it could really all come down to what type of chemistry and what type of identity the staff wants to build. Because how do you leave Claude Giroux off your team? How do you leave Ryan Getzlaff off your team? Mm-hmm. How do you leave Joe Thornton off your team? You cannot justify leaving anybody off this team, but you also can't take seven centers.
Well, therein lies, I think that's going to be the biggest thing. You're right, the identity. Are we going to go with a young and partially experienced team in this team in the next Olympics? Or do they want to bring back all the experience and leadership that guys like Thornton and Getzlaff will bring?
But again, you're talking about experience and leadership that 4 years ago was just barely able to get it done on small ice.
I think then we're going to have to go to the deeper question then. Of who's going to be running the team and who's going to be making these choices, like, officially, because at the World Juniors, they didn't make the best call.
No, they didn't. I'm not into the game of predicting management. If there's one thing I have not ever been able to do successfully during this stint of hockey yammering that we've done here, it is get inside the head of management structure. Because as far as I'm concerned, everybody's doing everything wrong. So I'm just going to go with my own gut. And my own gut says I'll take three scoring lines and a true fourth line, and I will take the best two-way center in the game in Patrice Bergeron for that. If Bergeron's health does not hold up, because we know he's been susceptible in the past, Jordan Stahl is my next man up. I would never, ever be surprised to see the guy who finished third in league scoring last year make his Olympic squad. Because Claude Giroux could very well end up on this team, and rightfully so. They could leave Stahl home, Eric Stahl, and give Claude Giroux that third-line center spot. But we will have to see. Now let's get to the defensive part of the Stahl equation. You weren't sure about having Mark Stahl on your team. You care to elaborate as to some of the reasons why you don't necessarily trust his game, or
it's not honest to God,
wouldn't put him in that position, let's say.
It's not even so much that. It's just I haven't seen enough of him. I haven't gone out of my way to watch him. I've seen a lot of Eric. I've seen a lot of Jordan. I watched a lot of Pittsburgh games. I like watching Carolina, too.
So it's the James factor, the I don't see him, so he's not there.
Kind of. I mean, I don't have as broad a range as you guys do. Well, as you do, I guess, because what does James know?
West side?
Yeah.
James only watching the West Coast hockey.
But, maybe I'm completely wrong. It would not be the first time at all. And I guess I'll have to pay more attention to it and then maybe make a better decision once I know more of what I'm talking about. But just from my experience in Stahl, I prefer those two.
All right, fair enough. Now, I actually do have Mark Stahl on my team, but not as a gimme. I have five gimmies on my Olympic team in the defensive position. I think you obviously are taking Shea Weber with you. You obviously are taking Drew Doughty and Duncan Keith. I would take Alex Pietrangelo based on the fact that he damn near won the Norris last year.
He's doing well this year, too, so far.
Yep. And I'm taking Chris Letang because I really like a puck-moving, mobile defenseman to get the puck out of my back end and a quarterback to power play. So we are looking at those five. I think for the sixth slot, for me, it comes down to Mark Stahl and Brent Seabrook. I know Seabrook has got the experience. He was there last time around. But I take Stahl over them. Now, for my number seven slot on the Canadian blue line, here's where it comes down to, in my opinion, you go with either youth or age, and you need a purely offensive defenseman. So, whoever is hottest when it comes time to leave, whoever has the most points the moment they arrive at the airport, between PK Subban and Dan Boyle. I will either take the veteran, proven, has done it a million times, knows how to move a puck on a power play defenseman in Dan Boyle, or I will take the hottest stick in the league, which PK Subban is right now, from the offensive blue line. Nobody has been better since PK Subban returned to the league than at getting the puck on net and making that basically turn over into offensive production. Yeah. He's been incredible.
Yeah, since he's come back, he's scoring a point a game. PK is a fun guy to watch play hockey.
He is also a huge liability.
Yeah, but if you've got that experienced D-man on the other side...
Well, that's why I'm taking him as my number seven.
Yeah, there you go.
So that being said, I would take either PK Subban or Dan Boyle as my number seven, leaving me with Brent Seabrook not making my team, Dan Girardi not making my team, Michael Delzato not making my Olympic team, and Dan Hemhuis not making my Olympic team.
It's an embarrassment of riches. It's crazy
You could make an Olympic team out of the guys I'm leaving off.
It's nuts, too. Maybe we can have a Canada 1, Canada 2 kind of situation.
Yeah, I don't think the Olympics let you do that.
Yeah. We'll say it's a Quebec team. Quebec wants to be independent, so, you know, there you go.
Yeah. Ah. I don't know about any of that.
No, that's a horrible idea. I'm joking. Just one. But there are just so many people to leave out, and it's...
There is, yeah.
It's going to be a hell of a time when it comes time to do this.
So, we've gotten through Crosby. Nah. We've gotten through Stahls. Let's get to Nash and Young. Rick Nash, the international beast for Team Canada. 53 points in 54 games while wearing the Maple Leaf. That is combined through World Junior Championships, World Hockey Championships, and Olympic competition. One of the very few absolute deadlock, 100% certain shoe-in locks on this team. Do you agree?
Yes. Yeah, you can't not have a guy like him play for Team Canada. It would just be imprudent. Absolutely. Unless, God forbid, he gets hurt or something like that, there's no way this guy isn't making that flight and getting some big-time minutes.
Absolutely.
He's a stud. He's got, as you said, 54 points in 53 games.
Other way around. But
other way around. Anyway.
And if you take out the World Junior Championships, where he was actually far under a point per game, since turning pro, he is well over a point per game in international competition for Canada.
He's won 2 golds and 3 silvers, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And what I think is really fascinating about the Rick Nash situation right now, and you can tell me your thoughts on this as well, is that he has always come onto the international stage from a very small market. And I can't help but wonder if if that affects the way he approaches the game. Will the fact that he was coming from Columbus with essentially no pressure and no attention be an advantage to the past Rick Nash? Or will the future Rick Nash have the advantage because he's coming in from the New York Rangers with all kinds of all-star line mates and media attention swirling around him? Do you think it will do him better to carry momentum or to be the sort of not thought about factor heading in?
Honestly, with a guy like Nash, I don't think it's going to make a difference one way or the other. I think he's going to show up and play his butt off and just be the Rick Nash that we've always seen in international competition. The guy just has it together when it comes to international play. He's calm, cool, and collected. He sees the ice, and since it's bigger rink, he sees more of it.
Absolutely. Yeah, listen, when you talk about Lindros being a big guy with great hands.
Yeah, there you go.
Nash is not quite as physical, but very similar.
He can be.
But I mean, let's Eric Lindros used to come out of the gates like a Mack truck.
Oh yeah, no, I'm not saying he can be. I'm not saying he can be Lindros physical. But
Lindros was physical, but he was also nasty.
Yeah, yeah. But no, I don't think. I really don't think the bright lights and instant fame of being on Broadway is going to have an adverse or a positive effect on him. I think the fact he's playing in New York now with some talent finally.
See, that's the thing is, I feel like it may give him a leg up.
Yeah.
Good. Because he was so good with Jonathan Toews last time around. And we're seeing Rick Nash just now settle into his New York Ranger teammates. We're seeing him skate with Gaborik and Richards. This is a guy who I think learning to play with elite playmakers on a regular basis will maybe even elevate his international game further. Especially when you, as you said, you get a guy like that on the big ice. A big body who can generate speed and open ice is dangerous on that Olympic size ice.
Absolutely, yeah. He's a force to be reckoned with. And, I mean, he's picking it up in New York. It was a little bit of a slow start, I think.
He's slow out of the gates.
He's at 10 points now. He's a plus 7. He's got a shorty, some penalties.
I think most of those 10 points have come over his last 7 or 8 games, though. I know he's been on...
And he's averaging 21 minutes a game.
And that's huge, because especially on a John Tortorella-coached team...
Yeah, you earn those minutes.
You don't just get minutes handed to you because you're Rick Nash. Yeah. That's not how it operates. He's not a Lanvinio. He's not just going to run his stars until they die on the ice. If you mess up, you're going to spend some time in the press box, no matter how much money you're making. So that's a huge testament to his effectiveness, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so we've got Crosby as a lock. We've got Rick Nash as a lock. So we've talked about Crosby, Stalls, Nash. We got to get to the young. Now, here's my dilemma when I look at the, let's say, not, it's terrible to say this, lower caliber of talent for Team Canada. I mean, once you get past being among the top 4 players on earth, you're considered second tier in this country. So, you have to invite Jerome McGinley to camp, correct?
Yeah, you can't.
Yeah. You have to invite Joe Thornton, right?
Yes.
Corey Perry, Ryan Getzlaff, Mike Richards, all returnees.
Yeah.
All legitimate NHL superstars who have earned their stripes for Team Canada Hockey, correct?
Yeah, All right. You can't in good conscience not.
So who among them do you cut in favor of Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Taylor Hall, Jordan Eberle, Claude Giroux, Tyler Seguin, Jamie Benn? I mean, that's 7 guys right there. Like, what do you do with this embarrassment of riches, this overwhelming talent?
And you can even look at possibly – well, no, you wouldn't even need to look at some of the guys from the World Juniors who are going to be coming up. But, I mean, there are too many players to choose from. We've already named an entire team and a half, and now you've got to take into account all these young guys who, should be on the team as well as Shuin.
How do you not invite – Ryan Nugent Hopkins, Taylor Hall, Jordan Eberle?
Well, you can invite them all. It's a very crowded camp.
First off, of that list, I've got Jordan Eberle as a shoe-in if I'm picking the team. I don't know that he's a guarantee to be there, but I feel about Jordan Eberle the way James feels about Jonathan Toews. And that is one hell of a statement. Strong emotions. I'm literally like a hair short of asking this guy to be my Valentine on air. If that's that, these are some strong feelings. We're talking about James Toews love.
But you talk
about international competition. You talk about a consistent clutch performer. You have to have Jordan Eberle on this team. But here's going to be, if you ask me, the most difficult thing that the general manager of this Canadian Olympic team is going to have to do.
Telling the guys who can't play?
He's going to have to cut Jerome Iginla. There's no doubt. Jerome Iginla will not make a fourth Olympic appearance. It's unfortunate because if he does make the team, I give him the C over Crosby.
But
he doesn't make the team.
But you see, that I disagree with. Because, yeah, he's a great captain in Calgary. He's been a great captain for a long time. But you can't just give him the C as a sentimental favorite.
You give him the C as an emotional veteran leader.
I don't know about that. I mean, maybe give him an A. But, I mean, as a veteran leader, he wouldn't need that. If he's truly a veteran leader, then he should just be able to go onto that ice in any circumstance with any number on his back and any letter on his jersey and just contribute as a veteran.
I agree with you, but I put it to you this way. As a hockey player, would you rather listen to Sidney Crosby talk you up before a game or Jerome Iginla?
Well, yeah, definitely hands down Iginla.
Okay. And I mean, when I'm looking at the C and where it goes, that's my point. Is that?
But you're also. We were just talking earlier, though, about the C being a marketing thing as well.
Only between Taves and Crosby, because I feel like these are two players who Crosby gets 5% more credit than he deserves. Taves gets 5% less credit than he deserves, and Taves is, I would say, about neck and neck with Crosby in terms of contributions overall to a team. He'll never be as sexy a pick, but he will contribute to his team, I would say, just about as much as Sidney Crosby would. And for that reason, when they're neck and neck like that, I will give the marketing concept the tiebreak. But I don't think that Crosby and Iginla are neck and neck.
Problem is for Iginla, too, though, is that you get, as far as justification for cutting him, he only heats up in the last couple of months of the season.
That's true. And February is one of those months starting next year.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, okay, sure. But you still, I don't see him being on that team anymore.
No, I think it's a moot point. Like I said, I think at some point, and I believe it'll be Steve Yzerman, is going to have to sit down and cut Jerome Iginla. And I think that is going to be incredibly difficult. I think slightly less difficult will be the moment he has to cut Joe Thornton. Because as effective as Joe Thornton is, there just aren't any center spots left.
No.
And he can't play a wing.
No, certainly not.
So what do you do? What do you do?
You've got to do what's best for Hockey Canada and the team. And that's why someone like Yzerman, I think, would be able to do that.
Exactly. I think you need somebody who has their finger on the pulse of the National Hockey League currently. I think that's going to be a huge factor, is getting someone who understands specifically what is happening from early January to mid-January of next year. I think that's when the vast majority of these decisions are going to be made. Because Iginla does heat up. What if Iginla comes out of the gates and this time next year he's already at 21, 22 goals on pace for 35? Then how do you leave him off?
Well, Calgary will never let him go if he's actually putting up points.
Well, no, they would let him go. They have to let him go. He would walk.
Yeah.
So that being said, we have looked at Crosby, the Stalls, Nash, and Young. How young will this team be? I think these are going to be some of the major storylines. I know we have absolutely provided more questions than answers so far, but that's kind of the point here. This show is all about basically listening in on real hockey conversation. I'm not going to predict the Olympic team a year out because that's foolish. I'll tell you what, I will eat my hat if Ray Ferraro nailed that Olympic prediction a year out with mustard live on air.
If you've got to pick between Thornton and Iginla's obviously the choice. I mean, the last two Olympics, Thornton only had, I think, a goal and assist in each one. Iginla had 2-1 in the 05-06 or in the 06 Olympics, and then he had 7 points, 5 goals and 2 assists in the last Olympics. So he is a proven point getter. I mean, he'd definitely be the toughest cut to make.
He would be the toughest cut to make, but I think he's also the most
logical
cut to make. And so I wonder, do you even invite him to the camp? Do you invite, if there's a selection camp, presumably there would be late in the summer, just so that they can get a look at guys, is what they generally tend to do, and then let them go about their season and scout them from there.
Do you think someone like Iginla would go in a non-playing role to accompany the team to bring that leadership to the guys?
No, not as an active player. I think the moment he retires, he will. I think that there's too much pride among professional athletes to look at yourself in the mirror and say, I am still a player, but I'm not a good enough player, and I'm still going to go. I think that there's just too much. It's too gut-wrenching. It's too much of a soul-searching kind of call. But again, maybe not. Yeah, I'm gonna settle on no with that one.
All right.
So we're at that point in the program. We have got a very special treat. This morning, I had a chance to sit down with Montreal Pond Hockey Festival organizer Ryan French McDougall. And anybody who has been following the show for the last little bit will know that Adam and I were fortunate enough to participate in this incredible festival 2 weekends ago.
Awesome time. Wicked.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we have not had enough good things to say about it since. I mean, we've been ranting and raving. We sound like lunatics.
Yep. Well, more so than usual.
More so. Yeah, exactly. Just a fantastic time over the course of the entire weekend. A lot of teams coming in from, you'll hear in the interview, Ryan will tell everybody sort of all over North America, distance, international teams coming in, the tournament growing by leaps and bounds every single year, big time sponsors on board. And I think probably the most impressive part to me was this sense of camaraderie and this sense of community that existed throughout the entire tournament. Everybody was there because they thought they had a chance at winning, and everybody was skating hard and you know, really sacrificing to play the game. They wanted to win.
Yeah.
But I also saw no less than 24 occasions where a team voluntarily acknowledged, no, we touched the puck last before it went out of bounds. It's your turn to have it now.
Yeah, no.
So you'll see the pucks that skipped over the opening and into the open back net, guys fishing it out and saying, no, that didn't count. Not a goal.
Yeah.
Just
it was a tournament that brought out the best in people, because it's a pond hockey tournament, and that just brings you back to the very essence of what hockey is all about. You know, just being out there with your buddies. It's cold. It's bright outside. It's snowing, and you're just skating around having a fantastic time.
Absolutely. And you felt like a little kid.
Yeah. I wrote an article on it, which is going to be up on the site first thing tomorrow morning as well.
Excellent.
Yeah, so that'll be something worth reading.
Yeah, I actually got a chance to proof that article. Very insightful. Very, very much just a reflection on the personal experience. And I think if anybody out there wants to know what it's like to just show up as a player to this tournament and have a great time, I think your piece did a fantastic job of just sort of running us through the day of a hockey player in this tournament. And it was spectacular. I mean, the environment, the people organizing it were super friendly at all times.
Oh, yeah.
No shortage of information, no shortage of parking, no shortage of places to get dressed. The food was cheap. The beer started flowing early in the morning.
For $3 a bottle.
$3 a beer. What? You cannot go wrong. Unless, of course, you are the table of young gentlemen who were across from us on the morning of day two, who were informed 7 minutes into their game time that their game had begun 7 minutes prior. And their response was literally, we'll be there as soon as we finish this round. With that being said, fantastic weekend. Guys, there's going to be all the contact information for this Montreal Pond Hockey Festival. We're going to play this little bit of an interview for you guys right now. So here it is this morning. Myself, K. Ross Reed, again, sitting down with Ryan French McDougall, organizer and really go-to guy.
Cool dude.
In general,
very
for
cool
all
dude.
Things Montreal Pond Hockey Festival. If you get a chance, go check out their website, and here's the interview. All right, this is K. Ross Reed, the man they call Crossbar, with a special interview for this week's program. Now, loyal listeners to Off the Crossbar Live will remember that Adam O. Wells and myself, just 2 weekends ago,
had the pleasure of participating in the Montreal Pond Hockey Festival as members of H.C. Wellington J. Knickerbocker Fine Gentlemen's Athletic Supporters Club. And let me tell you, they really let you have some fun naming your team for this tournament. Now, we spent a good chunk of last week's show ranting and raving about the experience we had with this tournament, so this week I thought we'd go straight to the source. Joining me today on the program is tournament organizer and Hockey Glacier sales and marketing coordinator, Ryan French McDougall. First off, Ryan, congratulations on pulling off an amazing weekend of outdoor hockey, and thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us today. How are you?
Well, very well. Thank you very much for having me, Keegan. I appreciate it, and it's a real pleasure having you guys out there. And it's great being here.
Excellent. Great. So for anyone who is not yet familiar, why don't you just tell us a little bit about the Montreal Pond Hockey Festival, what it is, and maybe what your role is in organizing it?
Absolutely. Well, the Montreal Pond Hockey Festival came about in 2011. That was its inaugural year. And the whole concept kind of came up with a group of us. Well, specifically, I came in 2 years ago, but 3 years ago, we had the first event, and one of my fellow organizers, Mr. Andre Lefebvre, he was sitting with a group of guys, just kind of typically in a bar environment and just kind of chatting about, hey, look at all these great pond hockey events that are popping up all over North America, and the growth of that type of hockey was just flourishing. And we're saying to ourselves, wait a minute, we don't have a pond hockey tournament like this here in Montreal, which is, in some people's minds, the mecca of hockey. So let's pull one together, let's look at it, and let's bring it to the people of Montreal, and then bring people from the rest of North America to come on down and enjoy this beautiful hockey in this beautiful city of ours.
Well, I mean, it certainly does fit. I'm actually surprised to learn that. Is this the only outdoor tournament in Montreal?
Oh, in Montreal, pond hockey and natural ice surfaces were the only organized one that's out there. There are a few on the south shore of Montreal that exists in places like Magog, and there's a couple up in Laurentians, but we're the only one here on the island of Montreal, and we have a beautiful location, picturesque, as you saw yourself, Keegan, in Lachine. It really is a special place when you go there. You don't even feel like you're on the island of Montreal anymore. It's kind of this beautiful, natural enclave, if you will, and that's what's so appealing about our event.
It really is, actually, and I mean, the venue is spectacular. When you talk about the old brewery in Lachine, Quebec, very picturesque, going out across the water there, setting up all seven rinks. You guys really do have a premier spot for hosting an event like this.
Oh, it really is. We're really lucky. We work well with one of our partners, which is the Borough of Lachine. They've helped us out with setting up the old brewery there, and we kind of want to capture the historic nature of the area as well. A lot of our divisions, as you saw, were named after various historical things like trappers and voyageurs, who were involved in that fur trade back in the day, and then the old brewery, of course. And there's a lot of work involved with setting up an event like that. But I mean, at the end of the day, it really comes down to seeing the reaction of the players, the participants, and seeing how happy and thankful they are to have been able to participate in an event. And that's why we're doing it, basically.
Well, you're certainly attaining some notoriety very quickly. It seems that the quality of your experience is catching on. I heard a rumor that this year's event had 60 registered teams, up from 40 just a year ago. Did you really experience 50% growth for this event in one calendar year?
Well, actually, to give you even, we'll go even further back from that. From 2011, we had about 13 teams out there, and we went up to 43 teams. So that was almost 200% growth right there alone, and that
Wow.
was fantastic. And we were really happy about that. And then this year, our goal was actually to make it up to 60. We didn't quite make it. We were around 53 teams this year, but the growth is still happening each year. We're really proud of it, and we expect this year to be that kind of the kind of pinnacle year where we're going to explode after this, because we've grown, and word of mouth amongst the players, everybody really enjoyed themselves, we're seeing continued growth, and that's really what we want. And our goal is to hopefully get up to about 100 teams eventually, and with how many ever rinks that would be, but it'd definitely be more than seven rinks, that's for sure.
Excuse me. Now, it really does seem like word of mouth has been a major driving factor for you guys. I know that just speaking with the other players in the locker room and sort of through the day's activities, you've really created an atmosphere that takes a lot of people back to their childhood. And it's funny you mentioned, you know, there just aren't events like this around Montreal. It seems to me that you're getting that word of mouth more so than anything else, because I know I was roped in by just one guy that I played with who had an amazing time last year, and I certainly do plan on bringing a few more guys with me next year.
Well, that's fantastic. I mean, the more the merrier out there. That's for sure the objective on our part. But it really comes down to word of mouth. I mean, you live the experience, you see it, and like you said yourself, we're kind of building on that mentality of bringing the game back to how it used to be played. I mean, you know, this is something that maybe not so much us, some of us are maybe a little younger, but for, let's say, our grandparents and our parents, they all definitely learned how to play hockey for the most part out there on natural frozen ice surfaces, ponds, lakes, rivers. Then you maybe saw the creation of community rinks that came about too. And then that's kind of been lost over the years. I mean, we still have outdoor rinks out there in most of our cities. You know, as long as the weather's cooperating, that's a major challenge, of course. But we've wanted to really kind of harness that, bringing hockey back to its roots, you know, and showing it to a new generation as well. Because we have a lot of teams who are a lot of younger guys who probably grew up playing hockey for the most part in arenas. And so I you know, that's the objective, to really share that experience with everyone. It really is totally different. I mean, the ice, of course, is not the same as an indoor arena, but I think that's kind of part of the allure, kind of the majestic aspect of it, is that you're playing on a natural ice surface and you're out there with friends. You know, on Saturday you were there, you saw it on the weekend of February 2nd. It was snowing, and that was in itself, I think, majestic, right, special. So that's really what we're trying to harness and provide to all the participants that come out to our event.
Well, excellent. And let me tell you, you guys are doing a fantastic job of it. I mean, it's I've never felt more Canadian than I felt skating around at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, snow coming down, and refusal of that puck to lay flat because of the pond ice.
That's the beauty of the game. I mean, it's not your typical hockey game, but it's outdoor hockey, and that's what's so beautiful about it. I think you appreciate it, and you love it, and you take it in. You're like, wow, I'm standing out on a frozen surface here, and this is the Lac St. Louis, and I'm playing hockey with my friends. I'm playing against some guys who are out here doing the same circumstances, and I'm just here to have a good time, and, you know, maybe hopefully win our division, which in fact you guys did. Congratulations again.
Well, thank you very much. It certainly was not expected. Adam and I, of course, both signed up for a team that I believe was winless in last year's tournament. So for us to have accumulated one win was a huge thrill for our captain, Jim. To come home with a trophy was just overwhelming. We were genuinely surprised.
Well, I guess he brought in the ringers, eh? And you guys brought him to the championship. So no, that was great. And Jim, with your team captain, we've been communicating over the last couple of years, and we like to see that return in our players, and that's what, you know, brings us pride when we see captains coming back and really falling in love with our event and participate from year to year. Hopefully we get that type of dedication for years and years to come. So hopefully, like you said, Keegan, you'll be back next year, and we really do hope that'll be the case.
Excellent. Now, you talk about drawing in some of these teams. This tournament actually has a reputation of bringing in teams from all over North America. Who were some of the teams that covered the greatest distance to attend this year's event?
Well, this year was our real first year reaching out to teams from outside of Canada, and we had a few last year, but in our first year as well, we have them coming from Cape Cod. But this year especially, we had two teams come in from Ann Arbor, Michigan, and two teams also come in from Newfoundland. So that in itself was really amazing. We were really proud about that. The two teams that came in from Newfoundland actually were two women's teams. And this year we had our inaugural women's division, and that's something we're looking at continuing to grow. So, you know, obviously if you know any women out there, you know, come on out, sign up for next year, and we'd love to have you, and it's something that's definitely going to grow.
Excellent. Really is an inclusive event.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's definitely something we want. We got all age groups. I mean, it is an adult pond hockey tournament, but that goes, you know, we have age groups from 21 plus, 35 plus, 45 plus, and so on. So.
Excellent. Well, yeah, a spot for everybody.
Exactly. I mean, just no, unfortunately, no kids just yet, but we want to include everyone in all skill levels as well. So that's the objective.
Excellent. Now, people who listen to this show will know, you know, Adam, James, and myself, we all play a lot of organized hockey. But one thing that stood out for me was the friendliness of the atmosphere, the sort of general commitment to sportsmanship. Now, playing for HC Wellington J. Knickerbocker, we had teams calling off their own goals if they hopped in the net unfairly, admitting that they touched the puck last before it went out of play. It's almost unheard of in any kind of real competitive environment, and anyone who's played in my beer league will tell you that just because there's no scouts in the stands, it doesn't mean that guys are not willing to do anything to win.
No.
But that just didn't seem to be the case at the Montreal Pond Hockey Festival. What's the secret to maintaining such a respectful environment between competitors?
Well, really, it's setting up the environment, setting up the atmosphere. I mean, the whole objective of the tournament is really to have fun and enjoy the game for what it is. And, you know, if you think about when you were back out there and when you did play out with your friends on your local pond or local rink or whatever it was, sure, things got competitive, but at the end of the day, it was all about having fun. And that's really the energy that we wanna grasp and that we want to have at our event is to not make it a very competitive event, make it a fun, loving event where everybody gets along, everybody's playing hockey for the love of the game. And sure, you're going to have a few people who are going to get a little competitive out there. I mean, that's in some of us, it's in our nature to try to score those goals and try to win games, but that's really not at all what our objective is. And it's fantastic to see everyone, you know, smiling, laughing, joking, and just having a good time.
Well, it's really a kind of a testament to the type of person who wants to play pond hockey as opposed to a different type of tournament that they would travel to, is you get the people who are there sort of for that love of the game.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, the whole part of it is to just come out and enjoy that experience and to partake, as I mentioned, with your friends. And you know, we don't have any prizes, like money prizes that some tournaments may have, and that's because that would garner a certain amount of competition, and that's not what we're looking at, right? We're looking at just the experience of being out there with friends, the experience of being in the great outdoors, just playing hockey for the love of the game. And of course, you know, we also, you know, mention in some of our materials, like when we send out our rules and things like that, that this is really all about having fun and enjoying yourselves. It's not about winning. And we even have a special tiebreaker rule that we put in for the first time last year, where each team gets, as you experience yourself, a 4 penalty shots or tiebreaker shots before each game. And the reason why those shots exist is for to actually hold off blowouts, for example. So teams aren't scoring as many goals as they possibly can, because that's actually not what's going to determine if you make it through to the next round. If you're tied with another team, it's going to be those tiebreaker penalty shots, which I think, I mean, maybe you can let me know, that I think are quite amusing, quite fun to start off when you're shooting the puck from center ice and trying to nail one of the two small goals on each side. I think it's kind of a challenge and in itself a mini game, if you will, right?
Oh, it really is. And I mean, I didn't realize that was the tiebreaker at the end of the tournament. I believe that I was under the impression that was a different type of tiebreaker. That's actually a great idea to avoid those blowouts.
Exactly.
Yeah. And, well, I tell you, hitting the shoebox from center ice sounds like fun when you hit it. It can be a little frustrating when it comes time.
There were a couple of teams that I could tell you, I just did all the statistics. Some teams did not score one throughout the entire tournament. Others went up to, they had a total of 12 shots in the tourney. Some teams went up to 7 shots, which is actually quite amazing.
Wow.
They hit 7 on 12. So, but they also happened, that team specifically happened to not win any games, so it didn't really help them out at the end of the day.
Wow.
But I think it's all about it's all about making the event fun and experiencing different, different experiences. Like that tiebreaker shot, we've never seen it anywhere else, and I think that's something that's unique to our event and quite amazing, and it actually adds that the extra level of amusement.
Oh, absolutely.
I think so.
Absolutely. Now, I know that volunteers play a huge role in the success of this tournament, and it seemed like everywhere we turned the entire weekend, there was somebody just waiting to help out. And I know that most of them were not being paid, but that they were there kind of simply for that love of the game. And that is really impressive. How many people do you have sign up to volunteer, and what kind of roles did they play?
Well, all in all, we have about about, it's funny that you say that. All in all, we have about 10 volunteers that are part of the organizing committee and that came up and work upstairs and help us out with our merchandising or our registration and things like that. Those are our 10 kind of dedicated volunteers. We're always looking for more volunteers. A lot of our referees, for example, that came out there are people that we know, but they were not maybe volunteers. They were actually in a paid position, but something that we're always looking to expand on is getting more and more volunteers. And the ones we do have, though, we're very appreciative for all the hard work they've done, and they're very friendly people. They work really hard for us, and we were all there, you know, in the weeks leading up to the event and during the event itself, dedicating hours and hours of our time outside of usual hours. So we're talking between 6 p.m. and between 6 p.m. and 1 a.m. We're out there working on the site, getting things ready, and sometimes people don't realize how much time actually goes into preparing an event like this. You get there, everything's ready to go, and it's a two-day thing, and it's done. But there's actually weeks and weeks of planning that go into just the event, the specific days of the event itself, and then of course not to mention all the other work that goes into organizing in the months and months up the event, and of course after the event as well.
Oh, absolutely, and I mean that's why I wanted to take the time. If there are any of those volunteers out there listening right now, from everybody on our team, from every player that I spoke with, thank you. You really made it a fantastic weekend, and you guys did an awesome job.
Well, we really appreciate that. We really do appreciate it. We appreciate that, and like I said earlier too, if anybody's ever interested in coming out and seeing how this type of event works, you know, you can contact us on our website, just montrealponthockey.com, and you can reach out to us, and we're always looking for new people to come aboard, and we'll even show you the ropes and show you how some of the things work, and you know, we're watering the rinks, we're drilling for ice thickness, obviously for security purposes, and setting up the boards. There's a variety of things that need to be done, and we're always looking for a couple new sets of hands out there.
Excellent. Well, hopefully you'll get a few from this broadcast.
That'd be great, Keegan. If you ever want to volunteer, we're up for it as well.
Absolutely. I'll be out. I'm sure Adam and I will both be out next year. We'll see if we can rope James into it as well.
Perfect. That'd be great.
Well, now, I know that personally, well, I guess for the guys on our team anyway, some of the most fun that we had over the weekend was actually in between games. You had the bar set up, soup and chili being cooked, live music, all kinds of extra stuff. In lots of ways, it's those details that sort of help to define a person's experience, and it contributes a lot to the sense of camaraderie among the participants. We'll give you a little bit of shout-out time here. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the sponsors who helped to shape that off-ice experience for everybody that was involved? Because I know it's really crucial, their commitments, and they deserve a little bit of face time for the effort and for the investments that they put in.
Well, absolutely. I mean, our title sponsor, Desjardins Bank, was their first year coming in this year. We're very thankful to their involvement in the event. They've helped us out with a variety of things. You could talk about Moosehead, for example, Moosehead Breweries, who've also have been our beer supplier for the last couple of years, and obviously they provide the beverages up there, so you boys between games, boys and girls, I should say, now are, you know, can relax and have a cold one with buddies. We also have Ye Olde Orchard Pubs, which they're involved in the event. They're the ones who supplied the chili and the soup this year in terms of food, and we have all of that set up upstairs in the Ye Olde Orchard Lounge. We also had Kubota Montreal. I don't know if you noticed, we had an RTV 900 driving around the site the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
Our workhorse that, our ice maintenance crews would be driving around and then said, you know, fixing up, patching the ice, making sure that there's nothing, the quality of ice was as good as it could possibly be out there for you guys playing on it. Obviously, you said the puck was skipping once in a while, but that's like kind of a given.
Oh, it's a pond. And to be fair, it skips with me on a regular rink, so I wouldn't worry about it.
Oh, there you go. So, yeah, so you're not blaming our ice. It's actually you the whole time. That's right.
That's it. I've had a broken stick for 20 years.
That's it. And Kubota Montreal, and then obviously the city of Lachine itself, they're a very big partner of ours. We're very happy. And we also had TSN 690 give us some media coverage as well leading up to the event. So all of our sponsors have been very, very supportive of us. And there's a few more smaller ones out there as well, like Dynaware, which is protective activewear for children. We have Spa Rousseau, for example, which sports store. They gave us some gift certificates for participants. So all of these people played a key role for us, and we're very happy to have them on board. And without them, you know, the event wouldn't be what it is today. And we hope to continue having them from year to year after this.
Excellent. Well, yeah, and like I said, it's, you know, there, it's a combination of all those small things, and it really came together. It comes together exceptionally well.
Absolutely.
So now I know that we will be signing up again as soon as possible, but do we have a date for next year's tournament yet?
Yes, the dates for next year are actually going to be the weekend of February. Let me just go ahead here. I believe it's February 9th and 10th, if I'm not mistaken. I'm just going to scan up here to next year. February 8th and 9th next year. That's when the dates of the event are going to be.
All right. Excellent.
So if anybody's looking to sign up, they can go to onto our website, which is www.montrealpondhockey.com, or just search us in Google, and we'll be one of the first, definitely the first hit that comes up. And you just register there for the 2014 event. So we look forward to having you come out, and it should be bigger and better than ever.
Excellent, Ryan. Well, that's it for the questioning for now. Thank you very much for your time and for all of your efforts this year. Again, we had a fantastic time, and we will most certainly be back for many years in the future.
Well, thank you very much, Keke. Much appreciated. I appreciate being on the show, and I wish you guys the best of luck, and I'll be listening to you guys in the future. I mean, I discovered you guys a couple of weeks ago, and I'm very very glad to have you guys out here doing this type of work. Appreciate it.
Excellent. Well, thank you. And we will also put all of the information for the Montreal Pond Hockey Festival up on our website as well. So if you missed that, you can check it out at www.offthecrossbar.com. And remember that is crossbar with a K. This is K. Ross Reed with Montreal Pond Hockey Festival organizer Ryan French McDougall, and you have just gone off the crossbar.